Dr. Seth Moores, Director of Biology and Environment with the Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. And he joins us this morning to talk about a letter recently sent to Governor Mark Dayton by Grand Portage Band Chairman Norman Deschamps, asking Dayton to reconsider authorizing moose capture and collaring by the Minnesota DNR. Now, the governor instructed the DNR to discontinue collaring after a number of moose died as a result of the procedure. Welcome, Seth. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks, Jay. It's good to be here.
And so that move by the governor effectively cuts off your collaboration with DNR scientists.
Well, it certainly limits it. And I think that, you know, the perception of the work really influenced his decision. And I understand why he made that decision. But there really is a broad moose research community in this region. And we're doing some really good work understanding what's causing the population decline, and then being able to come up with some decision-making processes that will allow us to curtail that decline and actually improve the population.
So besides the DNR, anybody else working on this?
Yeah, absolutely. There are, I think, about five regional projects working on moose, doing collaring work. And all of the projects, except for ours in Grand Portage, are ultimately permitted through the DNR. So that decision by the governor impacts two separate projects that are being conducted through the University of Minnesota. It effectively cuts off the project that's being conducted at Voyageurs National Park. And I think there's another one that I'm forgetting off the top of my head. But it really limits the ability of a broader moose research community to be able to work together to understand what the issues are that are affecting the population and then to be able to do something about that.
So why is this specifically important to the band? How does it curtail your work?
Well, it doesn't curtail our work, but it certainly limits our collaborations with this broader moose research community. The moose is the primary subsistence species to the Grand Portage Band, and our government, our tribal government, and the agency for which I work have invested tremendously in the moose research because it's a primary subsistence species. We want to figure out what are the issues with the population, and we want to address those issues in a methodical manner and systematically work on each issue to the point that we can turn around the population decline. And this is a necessary process, and doing this type of research is really the only way to do that.
So you just mentioned the population, and so talk about losing a small number of adult moose versus the information gained on the population as a whole, also taking into account that the band is limited to the moose population on the reservation, which is a microcosm of moose in northern or northeastern Minnesota and then on up into Ontario.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So I think that the way that a lot of the work was publicized, there was an implication that most of the moose in Minnesota were being studied and collared, when in fact, really 3% of the entire Minnesota moose population has been studied with this collaring work to determine what's going on with the entire population in the state of Minnesota. And I think that perception wasn't very well understood by the public, and that's what started some of this negative publicity about the work. But what happens in wildlife research is you sample a very, very small fraction of the population to understand what's impacting the larger population. So a decision like this that effectively negates doing work on the population also negates the ability to find out what the issues are and sort of disallows us to be able to move forward to be able to alter that trend.
So it sounds to me like when the governor came out with this, it was just pretty much of a decision based upon getting some negative feedback on the fact that some of the adult moose were dying as a part of this, and so political pressure.
Yeah, I absolutely think that was the case. I think that a lot of the DNR's work was perceived poorly, partly because media focused on some of the challenges of doing the work rather than the results of the science. And, you know, I think that that's understandable. The media feel that they need to sort of pick up issues that are interesting to the public. But I think the scientists in general need to do a really good job, first of all, of understanding who they work for, the scientists in general, including myself, work for the public and work for our leadership. And it's our job to effectively communicate what the results of our science are, how it's effective, and why it's actually benefiting these species that we're interested in. And I think if we do a better job of that, and if we do a good job of educating the public how this science is effective and what we're learning and how it can change that population trajectory, I think that perception will change and the public will understand the benefits of this rather than the risks, and we should be able to continue to do this work.
Well, let's talk about the results of the band's research one step at a time, as outlined in Chairman Deschamps' letter.
Absolutely.
Well, okay. First, is there sufficient high-quality moose habitat here, and why is collaring important to gathering that information?
Yeah, that's a great question. We, on the Grand Portage Indian Reservation, we have a fairly high density of collared moose, and we've been collaring those moose successfully since 2009. We have hundreds of thousands of data points indicating where moose are using habitats on the reservation. And one of the things that we've done is analyzed the percent of the reservation land base that moose are actually using. And the premise is that the reservation land base is very similar to the land base here in Cook County in northeastern Minnesota in terms of our forest structure and the habitat types. Well, what we've learned is this. We've learned that moose are only using about 35% of the reservation land base, which means that there's a lot of available potential habitat that moose are not using on the res, and that's basically about 65% of the reservation. And so what we can do now is we can modify habitats using timber practices and forestry practices and logging practices to actually create new habitat on the reservation, and we can evaluate by collaring how effective those modifications are by seeing how our collared moose use those habitat modifications that we make.
So they're not using that 65% because it's just not suitable to them?
Yeah, you know, I think that Cook County and the reservation itself have had much reduced logging practices, and logging actually really generates a lot of high-quality forage for moose. Moose need young browse and young trees to eat as their primary forage base. And so because timber prices have dropped significantly and some of these other factors that are affecting mortality on moose, the moose population has declined. But I do think that if we generate more useful habitat both in Cook County and core moose range and also on the reservation, we could easily see a response by moose in terms of how they use that habitat.
And collaring, it tells you where they are.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, what's causing mortality then of adult moose? That's what kind of perpetrated this thing as far as the governor is concerned.
Yeah, and that was one of the focuses of our work as well. We have found that for our adult moose and our calf moose, there are different primary drivers of mortality. And for our adult moose work, we have found that about 40% of our adult collared moose are dying from brainworm infections. Brainworm is a parasite that's transmitted from deer. And so our perception is that if we manage our deer herd a little bit more intensely and can stabilize the deer population growth, we may reduce brainworm infection, and that would be massive. That's about 40% of the mortality that we're seeing on our adult moose.
Now, brainworm, when you say comes from deer, now the deer don't do it, but what is it? Is there a snail or something that...
Right. So most internal parasites have fairly complex life cycles that require multiple different species to get to an adult stage. So essentially the process with a brainworm is brainworm live in the brain cavities of white-tailed deer naturally and occasionally moose when they become infected with them. They lay eggs in the brain and it ends up in the bloodstream. Those eggs end up getting shed in the feces of whatever that host species is, whether it's a deer or a moose. Mm-hmm. Those eggs then get consumed by snails or slugs. They hatch, become larvae, and then the snails and slugs are inadvertently consumed by deer or moose when they're browsing on forage. And so that sort of completes that pathway. Those larvae then move into that host species, which is a deer or a moose, and migrate up to the brain cavity. In a deer, because they're a natural host for brainworm, the brainworm makes it to the brain case. It lives its life. It's happy. It's in the area of the brain that it wants to be. And it doesn't affect the deer negatively whatsoever. However, when the brainworm ends up in the brain case of a moose, it migrates trying to find the correct habitat, which happens to be a deer brain, and it causes a lot of neurological damage to the moose. They don't feed properly, and they ultimately end up dying or becoming susceptible to predation.
They also get pretty obstreperous.
Yes. Yeah,
they've been known to attack loggers.
And yeah, they do, and they'll walk in circles. We've mm-hmm. seen a lot of our moose just walking in circles, and you know, it's not a very nice way for an animal to die. But I do think that, you know, perhaps managing deer populations in core moose range might be one tool to help to reduce that transmission vector.
Well, the circling disease, as it's called among sheep farmers, is fairly well known in sheep country. And it is. They just walk around in circles. And, yep. You know, if people have been on farms or know anything about that, that might give them an idea of what's happening, except the animal is a lot bigger.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then, so for the adult moose, you know, brainworm are a major issue. We've seen high levels of winter ticks on our adult moose, causing starvation and anemia and hair loss. And, you know, essentially for our adult moose, 80% of our mortality is caused by health-related issues, either these parasites or disease issues.
Well, why are we seeing more ticks in the winter on moose?
Ticks are actually a natural parasite to moose, the winter ticks are. But the way that their population cycle works is in early spring, winter ticks drop off and essentially lay their eggs and mm-hmm. end up back on the moose again in the fall. One of the population mediating factors for winter ticks is snow depth. And so when we have deep snow in spring, say from February through May, tick populations are controlled by that deep snow and much more of those winter ticks die. However, when we have early snow melt because of a sort of warming temperature regime, those tick populations can explode and we can see very, very high tick loads on animals. We've come across a number of our collared animals with 80% hair loss due to ticks, and they're absolutely in a starvation state because, you know, with 100,000 ticks on your body, for a moose, that allows for basically the entire blood volume replacement in a two-month period.
Plus, it also removes hair and takes away the possibility of staying warm in
absolutely.
Bad weather.
Yep. And that's a huge nutritional cost to an animal. And, you know, when you're eating twigs and leaves, which have very, very low calorie density, you lose that equation and you're not able to produce enough energy to survive.
Well, what about mortality with calves?
That's a different factor. You know, I think the initial perceptions of what was going on with the moose population was wolves were taking all of the moose. And what we found is for our adult moose, it's all health issues. But for the calf population, they are getting absolutely hammered by predators to the point where it's not really sustainable. There's not enough recruitment into the population. And so what we have found doing our collaring work, and only because of this collaring work can we have deduced this, but we have found that about 70-some percent of moose calves are eaten by either bears or wolves within the first 2 weeks of life.
Wow.
So you're losing 70% of the calf crop in the first couple of weeks of life. And there's no way we would have known this without doing this collaring research. But what that means from a management perspective is if we do some form of predator population management, we may be able to tweak that a bit to the point where some of these calves survive into the next, you know, through the first growing season and are actually able to get into the population, which is a term biologists call recruitment. So recruitment levels are very, very low. What we see as the bottleneck to this recruitment is this predation in the first couple of weeks of life.
Well, that might be controllable by changing the management procedures with respect to bear, but what kind of complication arises in the case of wolves, which has a whole different cultural significance to the band.
Yeah, well, you make a good point. Well, first of all, it does allow some different management scenarios for bear. And one of the things we've done on the reservation beginning this year was we started an early spring bear hunt to help to control that bear population a bit so that we can reduce some of that predation mortality on moose calves. Wolves are a whole nother ball of wax, and the reason is because wolves have again been put on the endangered species list, so being able to implement management actions for wolves is problematic. You know, there are some cultural aspects of hunting and trapping wolves on different Indian reservations. I think in our region and for the Grand Portage Band, it's certainly less contentious of an issue. And I think that's likely because wolf populations have always been here, have always been relatively high. And, you know, we see some of the issues associated with wolves. We see, you know, this high calf mortality, and we see predation on dogs and cats on reservation lands. And so I think that that sort of opposition to hunting and trapping wolves oftentimes is stronger in areas where wolf densities are much lower.
Okay, let's move on to what I found was pretty interesting and did not know very much about, but talk about the health of the cow moose related to calf survival, that is, the mother of the calves.
Yeah, this is one of the coolest things that we have found by doing this calf collaring work. In Grand Portage, when we do this work, we always work with a wildlife veterinarian to help to manage, you know, animal welfare issues. But because we were working with very, very experienced veterinarians, we decided to do a study where we draw blood from the calves that we're working on to see how their immune systems are functioning. And so by drawing blood from these very, very young calves, we have begun testing how maternal antibodies, which are disease-fighting things that come from the adult moose and are transferred to the calves through nursing, we've been able to evaluate how those are being transferred in our calves. And what we have found is fascinating. But in the years when adult moose body condition is poor because of, you know, bad nutrition or high parasite loads, maternal antibody transfer has been low. And so our calves are starting life with a very compromised immune system. But in the years when the moose, the adult moose health is really good, they have good body condition, no hair loss from winter ticks, that maternal antibody transfer rate seems to be much higher. And so our calves could be starting out life much better when we have a healthy moose population as opposed to when we have an unhealthy moose population.
Well, we can actually draw an analogy. You know, we all know here as humans, the adult of the health of the mother often affects the health of the infant.
Yep, absolutely. And we believe this to be the case in two different areas, actually. We think that, you know, in terms of this immune system, health is one factor, but we also think that healthy moose likely make better parents and are probably more protective of their calves as well.
Should there be a predation situation? Yeah, okay, I understand.
Exactly,
that.
Exactly.
Okay, so now one of the sort of sad things about all this is abandonment by the mother moose of the calves. What do you find out about that?
Well, what we have seen thus far is many of the abandoned calves actually appear to have had compromised immune systems. And what we're speculating is we wonder if the cow moose, like many other species, are able to sort of detect whether or not their young are going to survive or not. And essentially, all animals make this sort of executive decision that the health of the adult has to trump the health of the calf or the young. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in a predation event, the moms will often run away from the calves because the mom can then produce new calves in subsequent years. And the same thing happens in some of these abandonment events as well. The mom basically perceives that this calf may not have high odds of success of surviving, and they take off so that they can maintain their health.
Any indication at all that the abandonment has to do with the fact that the calf has been collared?
I don't think it's the collaring itself that impacts that. I think it's more the stress of having something like a predator come in and affect those two animals. But I think that one thing that needs to be sort of made very clear to the public in doing this work is we've already found that about 75% of these calves are getting preyed upon within their first few weeks of life. And so even if some of that small fraction of animals that we study are lost due to some of the work that we do, it's a very, very small proportion of the total population, and that's not what's impacting the population at all. It's just allowing us to do this work to determine what the factors are.
And if you don't have a collared animal, you're not going to find that animal, particularly a calf, in time because the predator is going to get it.
Yeah, and one of the things we've done in Grand Portage, just to test whether or not collaring itself affects calf survival rates, is we have half of our collared cows where we don't collar the calves, and half of our collared calves where we do collar the calves. And so what we can do is evaluate at the end of the growing season when we fly our moose to see the proportion of cows with calves, whether we collared the calves or whether we didn't collar the calves. And what we're seeing already in the early parts of this study is those rates of predation are just about equal. Mm. And so I think we're going to see that there's essentially no survival difference on the cows whose calves we've collared versus ones that we haven't. But we really wanted to confront this and do this in a rigorous and scientific manner and do this for a few years so that we can establish categorically that this collaring isn't what's impacting the calf population. It's just allowing us to figure out what the issues are so that we can address them.
Okay, what's the next step for the band? And how is your research going to be affected if the DNR continues its ban on collaring?
That's a great question. So we're going to continue doing the work that we're doing. We're very methodical in terms of how we do this research, and we want to use that research to change our management activities and then to evaluate how effective those management activities are. So our intent is to continue doing the research that we're doing. But the consequences of the governor's decision is it makes it much tougher for us to work with some of these other entities that are studying moose. And, you know, in science, larger sample sizes provide much more accurate results. And so a lot of times these fellow moose scientists will share ideas. And so when you're out collaring moose, if somebody wants a sample for some other hypothesis that they're testing, you can collect those at the same time and you can get much larger sample sizes and get a much broader geographic analysis of what's going on and better data. So it really compromises our ability to work with some of these other partners when they're unable to collar moose.
And gives you a smaller sample of the total population, which is what your main concern is.
That's right. It really narrows the focus down to specifically what's going on the reservation.
Well, maybe you have a poster child in the photograph that went viral all over the place and was on cover of magazines of the moose triplets and their mother was collared.
Yeah, that was fascinating. And, you know, I did a little bit of research. First of all, triplets, natural triplets in terms of three embryos that produce calves is unbelievably rare. But apparently in the moose world, stealing progeny of other moose is actually relatively common. And I read an article that was written by some biologists in Alaska where they found fairly commonly triplets and quadruplets in moose. And what they had learned was that some of the moose cows that are much more defensive and sort of really, really care deeply about their calves were actually stealing calves from other moose and raising them. And so that's where you would sometimes see a moose with four calves. It basically took them from other animals. And so that's one possibility, you know, when we come across these abandonment issues, is there some possibility of getting these calves to a moose that has lost its calves due to predation or, you know, some of these more aggressive cows that have the capability of raising more than one. But I don't think, or I'm not certain that moose with triplets, they were naturally all three from that cow. It could have been some issue like that where this moose found another calf.
Sounds like moose playing the role of cowbirds.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. And, you know, I'd like to read more about that, but I was just really struck by hearing that hypothesis from these Alaskan biologists.
Dr. Seth Moore is Director of Biology and Environment with the Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and he joins us every so often to talk about things on the reservation, but particularly with his moose research. And so keep in touch. Let us know if there is a response from the governor's office on this at all and further information on working with the DNR.
Thanks. Sure. Thanks a lot. It was good to be here.